Joined in the studio right now by James Williams with the Chapel Hill Carboro NAACP. ChapelHillCarboroNAACP.com is their website for information about the local chapter, including upcoming events, which we'll talk about here in a couple minutes. But I got to get started, James, by talking about a special event for you, which was your 50th high school reunion, which you just attended, right? James, how's it going? Good to have you with us in the studio.
Well, it's good to be here, Aaron. And this weekend was interesting. It was good to reunite with some of my classmates, a few of whom I had not seen in 50 mm-hmm. years.
So you think anyone has ever come out of their, like, I feel like everyone comes out of their high school reunion and they always have the same reaction. How was it? It was interesting.
It was. I mean, you know, it is. It always is because
always
some people
is, yeah.
you don't recognize and some mm-hmm. people don't recognize you because yeah. time does things to people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But on a more serious note, you know, I was mindful of the fact that, so the number 65, I mean, we just this month, I think May 17, was the 65-year anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
I started Plymouth High School in 1965. We were the class of 69. 1965 was the first year that, for most of North Carolina, black students could choose to attend a white high school
mm-hmm.
Under so-called freedom of choice. And so I thought it was interesting because when I looked at our yearbook and the pictures that they had and the numbers for my graduating class of 69, there were roughly 100 students in our class. Of that 100, there were 13 black students.
Hmm.
It just so happened that the local paper in Plymouth, the Roanoke Beacon, was running an article about the graduating classes of 2019. Plymouth High School's class of roughly 100 students. Of those 100, there were probably 5 white students. Everything else, everybody else was either black or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
So what it clearly shows that in a significant portions of this country, and of this state, schools have resegregated. They also had the graduating classes of the the Christian academies, the charter schools, those. So let's say if there were 50 students, of those 50, they were all white except maybe one or two black students.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more things change, the more
yeah.
they stay the same.
And this has been an issue with schools of choice just as a concept for decades and decades,
yes.
right? That was initially a way to kind of reinforce segregation after Brown in the 60s, and now
right.
it's being used either inadvertently or intentionally to
right.
resegregate.
That's true, and
yeah.
and a significant amount of taxpayer
mm-hmm.
monies are going toward those institutions. Now in Hyde County, an interesting story because they boycotted the so-called integration process
mm-hmm.
there because they were shutting down all of the black schools. They were firing black teachers and principals, and so the African American community said, "We're going to boycott." And they didn't go to school for almost a year until there were some changes made, which is an interesting story in and of itself.
Yeah.
How people responded to that situation. Because here again, it was statewide. It was probably throughout the South, the closure of these institutions that were so important, but not just the closure of the schools, but what happened to these talented, a lot of those teachers had master's degrees, so they
mm-hmm.
didn't just have, undergrad, they had master's degrees. They were much more qualified than a lot of the white teachers who were allowed to stay on.
Yeah.
But because of the color of their skin, a lot of them got fired.
I remember reading, I think it was Bell Hooks was writing about her experience going to a recently integrated school and moving out of an all-black school into an integrated school. And she talks about that, like the quality of her education, at least at first, went down because she goes from an environment where she's supported and where she's got teachers who are very qualified who want her to succeed and moves into a school where no one does.
A different environment, yes. But anyway, but it was, we had a nice time. You know, I've known some of my, and interacted with some of my classmates, one, a former district court judge in Pitt County we interacted with from time to time over all these years. And so the memories, there were a lot of good memories also, but I tend to put things in historical context. It's just a part of who I am.
That's good, I think, yeah. More people should, I feel.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, something else I did want to mention. I think when I was last here, I don't know, a month or so ago, I mentioned that we were planning to screen the documentary Rigged, which was about partisan gerrymandering and voter suppression sort of across the country. But it had a fairly heavy North Carolina focus. The screening that we did at the Varsity Theater earlier this month, I believe, was the first screening in the state of North Carolina.
Nice.
The Varsity was practically filled. We had a wonderful panel, including Tomas Lopez of Democracy North Carolina, and especially Allison Riggs, who had just argued the North Carolina partisan gerrymandering case before the U.S. Supreme Court about a month or so before the screening. And we had a representative from the League of Women Voters North Carolina, which is the named plaintiff in that case. And so there was a lot of good discussion from the panel and then a lively Q&A from the audience. We were really, and we, when I say we, I mean myself, but also people in attendance were really excited about the fact that Miss Armenta Eaton, the daughter of Miss Rosanelle Eaton, who, you know, as you know, is a civil rights and voter rights icon in the state of North Carolina, probably across the nation, who passed in December of last year. And the film was actually dedicated to her. Well, her daughter and a number of her friends were able to join us.
Oh,
and
wow.
And that was really powerful. Yeah.
That's really cool. So whenever I go to a movie like this, and I had this experience with 13th, the documentary on the 13th Amendment and the aftermath with incarceration, I always go into a movie like that thinking, oh, I know the subject matter. Like, I've read about this. And then I always learn something that I was not expecting to. What did you learn at the screening that you weren't expecting to?
Well, I don't know that, well, I kind of cheated on his name before. so I don't know. Well, a couple of things that I learned, not so much from the documentary. Well, you know, part of it is the scope of purging of voters that, I mean, I had heard about purging in other parts of the country. But there's some fairly significant purging going on in the state of North Carolina. Particularly, they focused in Fayetteville, where some self-appointed person was, and he gave the number of people who he personally was responsible for getting off the voter rolls, even though quite a few of those people were legitimate people. They had either changed addresses or the mail didn't get to them as it was supposed to, and as a result of this process that they were able to use, their ability to vote was challenged. And this is something that is part of this whole effort to target certain neighborhoods, to target certain people of a certain demographic, to take them off the rolls so that they can't vote, so that those in power can remain in power. and our democracy suffers as a result. Mm-hmm.
And even if people end up being able to vote after being targeted in that way, they still have to go through that extra process,
right.
And it makes it that much more difficult and disincentivizes them from going and trying again.
Instead of, you know, in a true democracy, a vibrant democracy, mm-hmm. being able to vote should be the easiest thing in the world.
We should be
encouraging
that. Yeah.
people to vote and expanding it. Instead, we're in this era where there's a lot of effort being placed on prohibiting or making it more difficult mm-hmm. for people to vote.
Speaking with James Williams, we're talking about the documentary Rigged, which screened earlier this month at the Varsity Theater, about partisan gerrymandering and just voter suppression in North Carolina. Supreme Court is going to be ruling. They've heard the oral arguments already. They will be ruling on that partisan gerrymandering case probably in the next couple, 3 weeks thereabouts is what we're expecting.
Expect,
yeah, thereabouts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of how that ends up turning out, there is still the legislative move as well to end partisan gerrymandering and put the redistricting in the hands of a nonpartisan independent commission that doesn't actually stand to benefit from the lines being drawn a particular way.
That is correct. And one of the things that stuck with me that mm-hmm. Allison Riggs said, I mean, Allison is one of the foremost litigators of voter issues in the country. And she said, we need to be mindful not to place too much confidence in the ability of the courts to get this right, mm-hmm. that people need to be organized and active and persistent in terms of, you know, both locally, on a state level, and on a national level to address these issues and not be totally reliant on the Supreme Court or even your state court to necessarily get it right.
And work both ways at the same time. Work
right.
through the courts and work through the legislature. This is the desegregation issue in the 1950s and 60s. Brown gets handed down in 54, and it's not until Congress steps in 10 years later that movement happens in some states.
When money was at stake, mm-hmm. that's when a lot of places decided to, okay, maybe it's time that we do this.
Yep.
And it is amazing. You know, it's something to think about how successful, if you call it success, North Carolina was in delaying mm-hmm. the inevitable, because they kind of did it in a nice and polite way, you know, and so they got some passes that some other places didn't get in terms of time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we're kind of studying the story of this in Chapel Hill, now that we've got the civil rights timeline and we're making more of an effort to bring that history back, that's part of it. The slowness, the niceness, but still dragging your heels and dragging your heels.
Yeah. That's right.
Yep.
And so, you know, I just want to mention one or two other things. Mm-hmm. So yesterday being Memorial Day, and of course you being a well-versed in history, there's some indication that the first Memorial Day took place in Charleston in 1865, I believe May 1, 1865, when some former slaves, some freed people, went out to this race, you know, horse race track in Charleston and properly buried some Union soldiers that who had been killed, and the Confederates had just more or less left, and then they had a big celebration, you know, in honor of those troops. Well, it sort of caught on, and then it was called Decoration Day, mm-hmm. and then there began to be these types of ceremonies, not just for Union soldiers but for Confederate soldiers. But I'm reminded of a speech that Frederick Douglass gave in 1871 on Decoration Day. And I can't remember whether he was in Boston. I think he may have been in Boston. But Frederick is such a, you know, like I've said before, he has a prescience about him. And he was aware that there was a move afoot to sort of honor the Confederacy and their soldiers, and to rewrite history in terms of, you know, who was on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was just 1 year after the passage of the 13th Amendment. So, you know, a lot of people were happy. We've really made progress. And he was warning people, and I wrote down part of just a, he said, May My right hand forget her cunning, and my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I forget the parties to that terrible, protracted, and bloody conflict. And then he goes on to say, we are not here to applaud manly courage, as it has been displayed in a noble cause. We must never forget that victory to the rebellion meant death to the republic. So what he was saying, and we hear this today quite a bit about how, you know, Confederate monuments should be allowed to stand in the Confederate flag because we're just honoring our courageous forefathers. Well, but, you know, you're doing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what he's warning about, is that had they had their way, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have the country that we have today if the rebellion had won. And just because they were brave doesn't mean that they are worthy of this praise and this adoration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of think about that when we think about Memorial Day and honoring those who lost their lives. But I also think about, you know, so many African-American soldiers since the Revolutionary War who volunteered to fight, wanted to fight, and then coming home from those wars, World War I, World War II, who were brutalized and a number killed just for wearing the uniform. And here again in May of 1919, mm-hmm. we have W.E.B. Du Bois writing in the Crisis magazine, the magazine of the NAACP, Returning Soldiers. We return from fighting, we return fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you had the Red Summer of 1919, where so many of those soldiers and others were killed, brutally killed, just, you know, for racist reasons.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with James Williams, Chapel Hill Carborough, NAACP.com for more information on the Chapel Hill Carborough chapter. I got to wrap up. Upcoming events that people want to know about?
Upcoming events. One thing I do want to put on the table, and you'll mm-hmm. be hearing more about this, I'm really excited about plans that are underway for a community book read that our branch, in conjunction with some other organizations, of Henry Louis Gates's book, Stony the Road, which is about Reconstruction. So in addition to the community book read, I'm in the process of planning some programming in support of that. And it's just amazing to live in this area and have so many scholar citizens who are willing to give of their time, you know, for events like this. And I think we're going to have a spectacular symposium on this issue sometime
this
summer.
Roughly when is that?
It's
sometime this summer?
The program is probably going to be sometime in August.
Okay.
But the book read part is going to start before then.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
That's going to be good. Chapel Hill Carborough, NAACP.com for more information on the Chapel Hill Carborough chapter. James Williams, as always, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.